Welcome. Glad you're here. Luke chapter 9, verse 51. That's it. Just verse 51. Get there with your notes. Get there with your Bible. Get there with your electronic devices. However you get there. Let's read it. Let's read it right now. As the time approached for him to be taken, up to heaven, what was the time that was approaching for him to be taken up to heaven? Jesus resolutely said, what did he do? He resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Now, King James Bible says here he set his face for Jerusalem. He set out. He has a goal here. And the goal is not to go to Jerusalem to be betrayed. The goal is not to go to Jerusalem so that he can be arrested. The goal is not to go to Jerusalem so that he can go on trial and be mocked and be slapped and spit on and punched in the face. The goal is not so that he can be handed over to the Gentiles. The goal is not so that he can be scourged and taken to the cross and crucified. The goal is not so that he'll die. The goal is not so that he'll be buried and or even resurrected. Those are not the goals. What is the goal? What did he say? When the time came for him to what? To be taken up to heaven. That's his goal. That's his life's goal. This is life's goal. What I want to talk to you about today, and probably for a couple of times, is goal setting and the requirements of it and the necessities of it. Jesus set goals. Jesus set resolute goals. All successful people in life sets goals. They're very goal-oriented if you're successful. The aspect that makes a person successful in life is their ability. This is the major thing, is their ability to be able to set and establish goals. It's the skill of life if you're going to be successful. And Jesus was the most successful person who ever lived. Would you agree with that? Was Jesus successful? We're still talking about him 2,000 years later. And the reason that he's successful is because he set resolute goals. Goals. Now, he says resolute goals. So what is a resolute goal? I want to look at that in just a second. But see, what goals will do for you and what goals will do for me and for any person is get you through the tough times, the distressful times in life. You see, what goals will do for all of us is get us past the times and through the times where we're betrayed. Ever been betrayed? Well, goals will get you through that. Well, goals will get you past the time where you're arrested in life, where life just seems to be arrested and you're not moving forward. Goals will get you through that. Goals will get you past the times when you're mocked. Goals will get you past the times when it seems as life spits on you, punches you in the face. Goals get us past the times in life where life is scourged and we just feel beaten. Goals even get us past the times in life and through the times of life where we're crucified. It seems like we're just hanging out to dry. Goals get us past the time when we seem we're dead, we're buried, we're done with. Goals get us through that and beyond that. Why? Because if you have goals, there's always a resurrection. If you have goals, there's always an ascension. If you don't have them, you might just stay there. But when goals in our life, resolute goals, our life goes on and we become successful. He had resolute goals. What is a resolute? What does this mean? He resolutely set out. Let's take a look at this word in the Greek. Stairizo means to make stable, place firmly, set fast, fix, to render constant. Confirm one's what? Confirm one's mind. Resolutely setting out deals with the setting of one's mind. He stabled his mind. Put that back up, please. He stabled his mind. He firmly set his mind. He fixed his mind. And I love this one. He rendered his mind. Rendered it constant. Constantly rendering it. Confirming it. Now, I was fascinated with that particular thought. Because I do computer stuff. And I work with rendering. And in computer science, what rendering is dealing with graphics. It's dealing with videos. It's taking a graphic image, putting it together with other graphic images, and it renders into a video. And so what Jesus was doing here is he was graphically seeing what was going to happen in Jerusalem. He was rendering through it, putting all of the graphics together to come to the point where he's really wanting to go to, his goal in life. When you look at rendering further, a jury renders a verdict, right? How do they do that? Well, they assimilate all of the information, all the testimonies, and they render this together to come up with an image, to come up with an idea, to come up with a way that they can see better what happened. And then they take the verdict and they figure out who's guilty, who's innocent, because they have rendered through the thing. Now they can understand it better. They've processed it. Cooking. You render when you're cooking. You cook things down. You render them down to get to the substance, the essence of what you're rendering to. You combine these elements together in cooking, and then you render these things together so that you can come out with what you want. You render in music. Musical people render. They put all these keys together, all these notes together, their highs, their lows, their crescendos. They put all of this together so that they can render through it and come out with an audio. So if Jesus is rendering, these are the processes that he's going, he's hearing, he's seeing, he's living through this aspect. In acting, they render out the act. They put the characters together that are in the specific act, and they played out their parts, and they render out the thing that they want to project, the image that they want to project to people. So Jesus is rendering through this process. He's rendering his mind. He's working through it. He's seeing it. He's imagining it. He's living through this Jerusalem experience, and he's setting out to do it. But the thing that I want us to see is he's not focused on the betrayal, on the arrest, on the mocking, on the scourging, on the crucifixion, on the death, on the burial. He's not even focused on the resurrection. He's focused on his goal to be taken up into heaven. That's what he's talking about here when he's resolutely setting out to do this. He's rendering through this process. As we look at this deeper, we see he's dealing with his mind. He's getting into the depths of his mind. And I really want to work here with us today on this. You see, it's in the subconscious mind. It's when we get past the carnal mind. It's into the subconscious mind that the key is available for us to unlock the energy that's going to bring forth the reality of the goal in which we want. Without getting into the subconscious mind, and I'll make this very clear, hopefully, in just a second, without rendering through it and getting into the subconscious mind, all we're really doing is wishing. All we're really doing is hoping. We're never really having a goal that comes into reality. So this is, Jesus is rendering so that he can experience being taken up into heaven. Ah, this is really fascinating to me. So to start with, and the process that I want to take us through is understanding this rendering thing, is I want to look at a scripture in Mark. In Mark chapter 12, in verse 30. It's one we all are familiar with, so that's why I chose it. Jesus speaking here. He says here, love the Lord your God with all your heart. And with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. Now, those are the rendering processes. The goal here is to love God. The goal is, how do we love God? Here's how you love God. You render through this process. That's the goal. But this is true with any goal that we set in life, that we have in life. To have a successful life, we've got to do this render process. So, it starts with strength. It's your physical strength. It's your physical body. It provides the energy that you need. We have to express strength if we're going to love God. You express strength to get here today, to worship and to love God. You express strength in anything, any goal that you have in life. It's going to require your strength. And your physical body is the house, the home of your heart and your soul and your mind. Your heart, your soul, and your mind can't go anywhere unless that body goes. And it's going to require energy, and it's going to require some strength, physical strength. So we got to love God that way. That's kind of how we begin loving God, is just getting to a place where we can love Him. So then he says, now, love, also, you got to love God with your mind. Now, this is the carnal mind. This is the mind that we're most familiar with. But here's the problem with the mind. Romans chapter 8 and verse 7 says that the carnal mind is enmity with God. It doesn't like God. It doesn't understand God. The things of God are foolishness to the mind. And so what the mind is a filter. The mind filters with rationality. It rations through thoughts that we present to it. Thoughts that we throw at it. It filters these things out, and if it doesn't want it to get into the soul or the subconsciousness, what it does is cause doubt. It brings doubt, and it rejects it. It filters through, and what the mind considers truth, it lets through into the subconscious mind. But what it doesn't consider truth, it rejects. Let me easily explain this to you. Loving God requires that we love Him with all our mind. And this is the problem. This is where we have difficulties, because the carnal things, the mind considers the things of God extremely foolish. Let me give you several examples. How about prayer? Does the carnal mind want you to pray? It battles that. Why do that? What about praise? What about jumping up and down and clapping God and shouting to the Lord like we just sang about? What does the carnal mind say about that? That's foolishness. And it causes you to doubt doing it, so you don't do it. How about the gifts of the Spirit? How about talking in tongues? What does the carnal mind say about that? Oh, no, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't rationale. So it causes you to doubt it, and you reject it. And it doesn't get into the subconsciousness where it's got to get to become alive. So what about tithing? What does the carnal mind say about that? Now, that doesn't make a bit of sense. And so we never love God with all of our hearts, with all of our souls, with all of our minds. Because the mind, the carnal mind, is enmity to God. Enmity with God. That's foolish. I'm not going to do that. So we can't love God. But the thing with the mind is this. It's the place that we've got to get through if we're going to get into the soul, where we can love God with the soul or the subconscious mind. See, there's four areas of consciousness that Jesus projected to us. There's the physical consciousness, which we all are very physically aware of, or consciously aware of. Then there is the mind consciousness, which is the conscious mind. Then there's the subconscious mind, which we hear something about. And then there's the heart. These are all levels of our consciousness. What the mind now is the place that will inject into the soul or into the subconscious part that we've got to get to if we're going to love God or if we're going to accomplish any goal in life. We're going to render. We've got to render this part too. So this was fascinating to me, because it's in the soul dimension that life happens. Watch this. I want you to read this with me. You see, you are a living Let's read this in Genesis 2:7. And the Lord God formed man, or humanity, of the dust of the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a what? A living soul. It's in the soul dimension that life happens. It's in this soul dimension that goals come to life. When we can get it into the soul dimension, it begins to breathe. When we can get it into the soul dimension, even dust lives. So we've got to figure out how to get past that carnal mind that's at enmity with God and get into our subconscious mind or into our soul dimension so that our goals in life can live, including loving God. How do we do that? You see, it's so interesting to me because it's in this subconscious area, this soul area where life really happens that things take place. Okay, let me work this way. In the soul dimension, things are involuntary. Your heart beats involuntarily because it's in the soul dimension. You don't have to think about it, right? It just happens. Your lungs breathe. Your eyes blink. Your body temperature maintains about 98.6 unless you have a fever. And then that body automatically, you don't have to tell it to, raises its temperature because there's an infection. I don't think I said that right. But anyway, you have a temperature, so it automatically just rises up to fight and battle. You don't have to tell it to do any of this. The excretion aspects of your body, you have to have that. You don't have to think about it. It's going to happen, right? And so this is the level of which the involuntary, the subconscious mind operates. And it can do a trillion things at one time. And does. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. Well, and we try to multitask, but really we're just flipping from here to here to here to here to here to here. And we're not really thinking about two things. We're just flipping real fast. But your subconscious mind, your soul, it can do trillions of things at one time. Even healing. Now, I want you to hear this. Cut your finger. Put a Band-Aid on it. Do you have to tell it to heal? Don't forget about it, because it's going to heal. So, in the soul dimension, there's prosperity and there's health. Look at this. 3 John 1, 2. The apostle says, "Beloved, I wish above," how many things? "Above all things, that you mayest prosper and be in health, even as," not as your mind prospers, not as your body prospers, but as your soul prospers. Healing comes from the soul dimension because that's where life is. That's where God breathes. And whatever we can get into the soul dimension starts breathing, starts coming to life, becomes on its way to reality. But we've got one more rendering process that we've got to work through. We've got to get through one thing because the soul is the door to the heart. You've got to get it through the soul so it can get into the heart. In the heart is reality. No longer is it a thought. No longer is it simply alive in us. In reality, in the heart, it becomes real. Watch. Proverbs 4:23. Keep thy heart. Keep thy heart with all diligence. Keep your what? Keep your heart with all diligence. For, because, equals to. Here's what this does. For out of it are the what? Issues, the realities of life. Keep your heart. In the soul, it begins to breathe. But in the heart, it becomes real. In the heart is where it actually happens. It becomes issues of our life. Once in the heart, it will happen. Jesus talked about this. And he warned us the negative aspects of this thought, of this truth. He says that it's out of the heart that a person defiles themselves. It's not what goes into the person that defiles the person. It's what comes out of the person that defiles the person, right? So flipping that over into the positive aspect, so it's what comes out of the heart that makes us successful, that makes life reality. That makes life alive and real. It's what comes out of the heart. So concerning here our loving of God. How do we do this in the heart? Well, and if we're in the soul dimension, let me back up and pick that one up. Because when we love in God in the soul dimension, it's involuntary now, your love of God. So you're battling with it in the mind. But when you get it into your soul dimension, into the subconscious dimension, it's just involuntary now. It's just what you do. I don't even think about doing this. I don't even think about talking in tongues. I don't have to think through that. It's involuntary. It's a part of my prayer life. It's a part of what I do. I don't have to think about, should I read the Bible? It's involuntary. I don't have to think about writing my tithe check. It's involuntary. I'd feel like I was doing something bad wrong if I didn't write my tithe check. I had somebody telling me not very long ago, we were talking about that very issue about giving, and he said, I don't even think about it anymore. He said, I just do it. Because why? It's involuntary. You don't have to figure out if you've got the money or not. You don't have to process this because I'm loving God with my soul. Now, in the heart realm, it's not just an involuntary thing. It's real. God is real in the heart. When he's in your heart and you're loving him in that dimension, God is so, he just comes out. You don't have to think about talking about God. You're just going to talk about God. Your words are godly. Your walk in life is godly. You're godlike. Because God is real now. And I'm loving him in that dimension. So when we're talking here about our loving of God, we've got to filter through and get past thinking. Listen, let me go ahead and tell you this. It is not by the sweat of your brow that you're going to prosper. We're told the harder you work, the more you make. Well, let me ask you this question. The people who make the most, do they work the hardest? The people that are millionaires and make that money every year, do they work hard? Is it by the sweat of their brow? No. They work the least. And I'm going to show you why here in just a moment. But I want us to understand. We've got to get past the physical aspects of it and past the mental aspects of it where the doubt and all the stuff. We've got to get on into the subconsciousness aspects of it, into the soul dimensions aspect of it where it can begin to breathe. And then we've got to get it on into the heart so it can become real and we have reality in our lives. See, I want to show you this. It can become real. And let me go ahead and read this now to you. And Mark 11:24. I want us to see something here. That the purpose of prayer is not so we can give God our Santa Claus request. The purpose of prayer is so we can render. It's so that we can get our goals into the soul and into the heart. Let me read you this. It's a very, very familiar passage for all of us. Mark 11:23. Every preacher's preached on this. I tell you the truth. That's amazing. Jesus has to keep saying this. But he says, I tell you the truth. If anyone, if who now? If you got to say this. Who? Just Christians? Just Christ followers? Who? Anyone. If anyone does this, this is a principle. This is something that's set in motion. Just like gravity. If anyone says to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt where? In his heart. If you can get it through the heart. If you can get it into the heart, pass it down. Here's what's going to happen. But believes that what he says will happen. If you can get it into the heart, it will happen. It will be done involuntarily for him. You don't have to do it. It's just going to happen. Because it's alive in the soul and it's real in the heart. It will be done for him. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, prayer is not our just doing something, going through motions. Prayer is our rendering, our strength, our mind, our soul, and our heart, and coming out with this video, this image of success. making it happen. Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have it, you have received it, and what? It will be yours. I really want us to understand this. See, Jesus gave us this process of rendering to love God. And it's the process of any goal in life that we have. We've got to get it past these dimensions and into the dimension for which He was. He wants us to get to into the dimension of the heart. For now, I'm going to hopefully talk about this a little bit more in some lessons to come that I want to do on this. But for now, I want you just to realize that to get a goal into your heart, if you don't do that, it's just a wish. It's just a hope. We got to get it through. We got to render it through and get it in. Without goals, you drift aimlessly through life. You just like us on a raft with no oar, no motor. You just shoved on a river, and you're going to go wherever that current takes you. That's what a life without goals is. It's like whichever way the wind blows, you're just a kite, and you're just going to go with the wind. The friend we, and that's kind of how we go through life a lot of times if we don't have goals. But with goals, we become an arrow released by the soul, flying towards the target. There's a purpose. And so as we begin to do this, we understand that what we're thinking about, we're becoming. Whatever we think is what we become. Let me read you this. Proverbs 23:7. For as he thinketh where? His heart. As you think in your heart, so is he. So are you. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about where you're going in life? What are you thinking about? And notice that it's not thinking your mind. It's getting deeper into the subconscious. It's getting deeper into the heart. You can say a million times, I'm going to be a millionaire, I'm going to be successful. But until it gets into the subconscious and into the heart element, it's just a wish. I'm going to be healed. We've got to get into the soul. We've got to render this through. We've got to get to it, into the heart dimension, where it can breathe and where it can become live. What are you thinking about? What are you talking about? Successful people in life talk about where they're going. Jesus says, I'm going to Jerusalem. I've resolved it. It's resolute. I played the video. This is where I'm going. And he did. Unsuccessful people don't think about where they're going. They're thinking about their problems. That's what they're talking about. They're talking about their problems. They're talking about their failures. They're talking about who's to blame. You're to blame for me failing. They're blaming people. They're going through their difficulties in life, and that's what they're talking about. And they're talking about the very thing that they don't want, but they keep thinking about it and talking about it, and so they keep experiencing it. What you talk about, what you think about, is what you become. It's what the scriptures say. As you think, so are you. So you become. What do you think about? What do you talk about? And so what I want to do here in the remainder of the time that we have, doing pretty good, in the remainder of the time that we have, is I want to give you some thoughts here concerning this. I want to tell you two things. First of all, I want to talk about why, if goals are so important, why don't we set them? If goals are so important, why haven't I been told about this before? If I've got to have goals to be successful, why haven't I been taught about goals? And why don't I make them? And the second thing that I want to talk about is how do I begin? If goals are so important and so necessary in my life to become successful, then how do I begin? How do I begin to set resolute goals? Goals I can render. Goals I can process. Goals I can bring into reality. So these are the two things that I want to talk about. So number one, first of all, why don't we set goals? If they're so important, why don't we set goals? And Gather, what I want you to do, if you will, just put that up for me as I move through these, so I won't have to keep doing that just as I hit the point, just go to it. So the first thing, I think there's four reasons that this is. And the first reason is that we've never been told the importance of goals. Never been told. If you were raised in a family and your parents were not goal-oriented people, then you probably aren't goal-oriented people because you've never been taught the importance of goals and how it renders out, how it works through, and the importance of it. And also, if your acquaintances and your friends aren't goal-oriented people, then you're probably not a goal-oriented person either, because birds of a feather flock together because we hang around with like-minded people. So if you're going to adjust that, you may have to look for some new acquaintances in life. Because they're going to hold you back just by their non-goal-oriented behavior. Now, in my case, this is exactly what happened. My parents were great parents. They were great people. They were people of integrity. They were good, good people. But I would not call them goal-oriented. They lived well. My friends were good people. They were fun to be with, but neither were they goal-oriented people. So I didn't know anything about goals in my life. I am an educated man. I went through high school, those 12 years. I went 2 years, got an associate's degree in accounting. Then I went into the business world. In the business world, I went to all these classes and courses that they forced us to go to. I then went 4 years through theological training and teachings and those kinds of things. So that's over 18, probably 20 years of schooling. And not in any of those, in those 20 years of education, was I ever instructed the importance of goals. Now, I didn't go to one class, I didn't go to one course where it told me you need to set goals and tell me how to do it. So we're never told the importance of goals. And then number two, I think the second reason that we don't set goals is well, we think we've already set them that way. We think we already have goals set, or we don't know how to set them. So I want to just comment here just a few seconds and a few thoughts. You see, when you don't know how to do something, or when you think you've already done something but you really haven't, especially in goal setting, you just got a wish. You don't have a goal. If it's really not set the way it should be, if it's not clear, it's just a wish. You need to have a goal clear so that you can write it, so that it's that plain to you. Habakkuk says this in Habakkuk 2:2. It says, "And the Lord answered him and said," do what? Write the vision. Write it. Why? I don't want to write it. I don't want to set out. I don't know what to write. I don't know how to write it. I don't know what to do. I don't want to write it. Well, then you really don't have a goal, because it's not that plain to you yet. Here's why you write it, and make it plain. You write it so it'll be plain. It's not plain to you now because you've never pondered it and written it. But if you'll write it, it'll become plain. Make it plain upon tables that he may run that readeth it. I want to read that to you from the Amplified Bible. The Amplified Bible says this, "And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and engrave it so plainly upon tablets that everyone who passes may be able to read it." See, when somebody comes by and asks you about your goals in life, you should be able just to blurt it out. "Well, I think I want to do this, or I might do that." No, no, no. You know you're an arrow flying at your target. Read it easily and quickly as he hastens by. A goal is specific. A goal is clear. A goal is an amazing release of energy in your life. It's the soul dimension where it's going to be breathed and it's going to come alive. It's headed for the heart where it becomes reality. They did a study at Harvard Business School, very prestigious school, Harvard. Harvard Business School, they did a study, a survey, and they surveyed graduates. And these graduates were asked upon graduation if they had clear written goals. They found that in this whole class, 3% of that class had written goals. 13% of this class had goals, but they were not written. 84% of the class just wanted to get out of school and have summer. And that's the way a lot of it was snickering. But think that's what but see that's what we're, that's where we're at in life. We just want to have fun. We just want to have summer. And we never set goals. So 10 years later, they came back to the same class, to these same people. They interviewed them again, and they asked them about their incomes. The 13% who had goals but not written made twice the income that those who had no goals made. Twice. But the amazing thing was this. Those who had written their goals, the 3%, made 10 times on average what both the 13% and those who had none, what their income was. Made 10%, 10 times, made 10 times more than what they did on the average. Are we okay? Okay. So what I want you to see is the importance of goals. It will increase your income 10 times. That's, how many would like some of that? Right, yeah. So this is the importance of goals. So the third thing is that we don't know how, or we think we already have. It's, you don't have a goal unless you can do it clearly and you can write it plainly. Third reason is the fear of failure. Here, we sabotage our lives. We're fearful that we'll fail. We booby trap ourselves here because we would rather live at a lower life level and then have goals and feel like we failed. Well, that doesn't even make sense to my carnal mind. I mean, what if you just made half of it? What if you guys just got halfway there? What if you just accomplished half of your goals? I mean, what if that went down? We have a fear of failure. We sabotage our own life. And then the fourth reason that I think that we fail and don't set goals is because we're fearful of rejection. Well, what if I tell people about my goals and I don't get it and they laugh at me and, you know, they make fun of me, they mock me because I failed? Well, there's a simple solution for this. Don't tell them. Don't tell them your goals. What they don't know won't hurt you. Is that right? Don't tell them. And watch, let them watch your life be successful. That's the best thing you can do. Right? So, where are you here? Which one of those four, perhaps, that I mentioned is the reason that you don't have goals if you don't have goals? That you don't have them plainly or clearly written down? What are you, which one are you? Let me give you this illustration. What if you went to New York City and there was a house for you in New York City? And you had to find that house. The problem is that you were not given directions to the house. Nobody told you where the house was. Nobody told you how to get there. You didn't have a road map. There was no way to find it. You didn't have a GPS. You didn't have an address. You didn't have anything. Just given a vague description of the house. You're in New York City. How long would it take you to find that house? How long? Whole life. If then, by the time you got there, it's a dilapidated house. It's well, you don't even want it anymore. If you were to find it. And so this is kind of how we go through life. We take wishful rights and hopeful lefts, and then we say, well, that didn't work. Let's turn around. And so we do these turnarounds. And so 10, 20, 30 years later, we're still. Looking for the house. We're still looking for what we wanted in life. And this is doing life without goals. We don't know where we're going. We're just wishing and hoping and dreaming and thinking and turning lefts and rights, and we're still where we were 10, 20, 30 years ago. We're still unhappy. We're still discouraged. We're still uncontent. We're still broke. We're still sick. Come on. We gotta start seeing something here. We need to be that arrow flying towards it. So where are you in your resolute goal setting? Why haven't you written your specific goals as to where you want to be? So with that, that's the four reasons. So where are you? And then the second thing, and just winding it up just as quickly as I can, the second thing that I really want us to understand is, okay, how do I begin setting these goals? How do I begin doing? I want to show you. I really want to tell you how you do this. What you first got to do is you got to carve out some time. This is the most precious, purposeful thing, precious thing. It's beyond measure what it can mean to you that you will ever put yourself through. But you've got to carve out the time to do it. And then when you've carved out the time and you're sitting down with your paper and you're writing and perhaps whomever you're going to go with, or maybe you just want to do it by yourself first time and then compare with your spouse if you have one, ask this question. If my life was perfect in every respect 5 years from today, how does it look? What does my life look like 5 years from this day if things are perfect in every single way? Now, the reason that I say a five-year, let's call it my five-year fantasy. Let's call it that, my five-year fantasy. Why I'm saying 5 years is because studies have shown that we underestimate what we can possibly do in 1 year. We overestimate what we can possibly do in 1 year, and we underestimate what we can possibly do in 5 years. That's what the study shows. We overestimate if we guess for one. We underestimate if we try to think for five. Jesus had a three-year plan. But let's look at five. Five-year fantasy. Ask the question, if my life is perfect in every way, if I have got every asset, every talent, every gift, everything that I possibly could have to be successful in every way in my life, how does my life look in 5 years? Now, Charles Carter wrote a book. The name of the book is Peak Performances. Peak performance. And what this book is talking about is he targeted people who had a so-so life, just an average life, just going along with you know, just average success in life, like most of us. And then suddenly their lives exploded, and they began to do some astounding, amazing things in life. They began to prosper. Amazing events took place in their lives. And so he's targeted these people. And he went to them, and he interviewed them, and he says, what happened? What was the thing that caused your life to so drastically change and to explode into good areas and good dimensions? And they all responded in this one thing. And he terms it blue sky imagining. Blue sky imagining. What is that? Well, it's when you look into the sky and there's not a cloud up there. There is nothing up there that blurs your vision. There is nothing up there that hinders you from seeing forever. You can just see. And when people began to vision their lives that way, with no interferences, with no clouds, with no storms, with just seeing what they could possibly think, what they could possibly envision in their life in 5 years, their lives erupted. And they became successful in every way. They began reaching into their goals. So here are the things that we've got to process and render as we work through this aspect of a five-year goal or five-year fantasy. First of all, your career. What is your career in 5 years? Are you doing the same thing that you're doing today? Is your career the same? What is your income? What are they paying you to do that? Has that increased? Has that changed? Where are you working? Are you still working at the same place? With whom are you working? You're working with the same people. What is your level of authority now? Have you advanced? What's happening in your career life 5 years from now? Has anything happened? Unless it's a goal. Probably not. But if you have these goals set, and you say, here's where I want to be 5 years from now in my current occupation. What is your knowledge level? What have you learned that will cause you to advance? What have you learned and so that you can do better at your career? How's that looking 5 years from now? Number two, what we've got to look at is our finances. How do our finances look 5 years from now? How much money do you have? What's your savings look like? Do you have the savings? What have you got planned out for retirement? What kind of house do you live in? Is your house improved over these 5 years? What kind of automobile are you driving? What's going on in your life in the realm of your finances? Are you out of debt yet? Anybody should be able to get out of debt in 5 years. Where are you financially 5 years from now? If everything is perfect. So that's another area that we've got to render through. The third area that we've got to render through is family. Are you still married? I mean, a lot of people won't be. If you're not married, will you be married? What kind of a person have you married? What is your spouse like? Do they love God? What are they like? What does your family look like? I was thinking about this. I went through this process this week just so I would make sure that I had it, did it before I shot it at you. But I was thinking about that. Judy and I will be married 50 years. 5 years from now. 50 years. And listen, that's resolute. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. I'm not letting her get away. Where's your life? Think about it now. My children will be 5 years older. She'll be 5 years older. I'll be 5 years old. Everybody's older. My children, I've got one now at 50. I've got one 5 years from now that will be close to 50. I've got one really close behind him coming up to 50. I've got grandchildren. I've got four grandchildren. They're older. One's 18 years old. One's 17. I've helped them learn how to drive. They've driven my truck in 5 years. Oh, well, that's where I'm living. I'm 5 years from now. All right. I've got another one that's 12 years old. I think I'm close on these numbers. One's about 10. I'm spending a lot of time with my grandchildren. I'm imparting into them. I'm wanting them to understand goals and vision and the things that I've learned in life. I want to help them. What does your family look like 5 years from now? Because a family's change in 5 years, man. Okay. So, where's your in a week? Where is your family? What's your family? All right, let's look at another one real quickly. What does your body look like 5 years from now? What kind of physical health are you in 5 years from now? Say, well, anybody should be able to get in shape in 5 years. Am I right? Come on. This is. Think about it. What's your height? What should you weigh at that height? What kind of exercising do you do? Do you do any exercising? What do you do for your health? What kind of, if you're a perfect physical specimen in 5 years, what do you look like? What are you doing to make yourself healthy? Because your heart and your soul and your mind need that body. What are you doing in that area? So that's what you got to think about. How do I want to be in 5 years in my physical body? And then we'll do one more. How about your social life? What are you giving back to the society? How are you paying forward? What are you doing here? Are you a member of any of the social community's workings? What church do you attend? What are you doing in the church? How are you paying forward what God's been so good and to bless you with in your life? How are you handling your blessed life? What are you giving back? How are you making the world a better place when you're gone from it? What are you doing for people? See, all of these are things. And back to that, how much are you giving? Back to your financial aspect, how much are you giving to social events or to church or whatever? What are you doing in 5 years? Okay, I can't give right now. Well, can you in 5 years? You should be able to. What's your life like in 5 years? Now, once you've done that, once you've gone through just those processes and you've been brutally pretty honest with what you want to see in your life in 5 years, you ask this question. How? How? Now, a person who is unsuccessful will say this. How in the world is that going to happen? That's impossible. And so for them, it is. The successful person will say, how can I render this? How can I get it past my physical work, past my mental doubting, past into my subconscious soul? How can I get it into there so it can be breathed on by God, so that it can come alive in my life, so that it can be fed and planted into my heart, so that it can bring forth the fruit in my life, so that I can come from a goal to a reality? That's how. That's the question, how. I think we should clap on that too. That's good. And that doesn't bother me a bit. Anytime you guys want to do that, that's really good. So anyway, so that's the question. Now, what's your next step? What you're going to do? You go one way, you're going to walk out of this building, and you're going to go right back into the drifting through life, looking over New York City for your house. And by the time you find it, it's going to be dilapidated, and you're going to be old. Or you can take the other direction, and you can walk out of here, and you can begin rendering. And you can have a resolute mind, just like Jesus, because here's what I want you to hear. It says he resolutely set out for. He wasn't there yet. He resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Where are you going to, right now, as you walk out of this building, where are you going to resolutely set out for? What is your goals? We're going to be talking about more of this next time. Let's pray.